Sociology and Feminist Studies at Hampshire College. Been there for 40 years. And Bill Noel, Hampshire College trustee. I'll be speaking at in Denver at East High School on March 15th. That's Friday night at 7 o'clock. Check our website at democracynow.org. We also have an immediate job opening for a full-time junior systems administrator here in New York. Check democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Nirmin Sheikh, Carla Wills, Tammy Warrenoff, Sam Alcock, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, David Prude, Trina Nadura, Tamari Astudio. I'm Amy Goodman, Juan Gonzalez.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Fixing Your City, creating thriving neighborhoods and adapting to a changing world. On Thursday, March 14th, from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Trinity Episcopal Cathedral in Portland. Fixing Your City, Creating Thriving Neighborhoods and Adapting to a Changing World is a book release and talk by urban architect George Crandall. He'll discuss Portland growth, congestion, and global warming and identify steps the community can take to shape an equitable and resilient Portland. Again, that's Fixing Your City, Creating Thriving Neighborhoods and Adapting to a Changing World. On Thursday, March 14th, from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Trinity Episcopal Cathedral, 147 Northwest 19th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is KBOO Portland. You're listening to KBOO on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM, and on the web at kboo.fm. Coming up this morning on KBOO at 9, Alternative Radio looks at the state of Cuba-U.S. relations under the Trump administration. At 10 on Flashpoints, Dennis Bernstein looks at the jailing of Chelsea Manning and other news issues of the day. At 11, Stage and Studio is off this week. Instead, we have dual episodes of Art Focus with Joseph Galavan. In the first, he takes a look at the Portland Japanese Garden's latest exhibit, Ice and Snow. At 11:30, the second new episode of Art Focus features an interview with photographer Owen Carey about the show Ink, Body, Skin, Paint, and Fire at Gallery 114. All of this KBOO programming is made possible by member support. To become a member, go to kboo.fm and click on the button marked Donate. Today in Portland, we can expect a cloudy day with occasional rain showers and a high temperature of about 50 degrees. And now we're going to present a special episode of Final Straw.
Airing first in Asheville, North Carolina, this is The Final Straw, and I'm William Goodenough.
And I'm Bursa Goodness.
Gord Hill is an indigenous author, anarchist, anti-fascist, and militant, a member of the Kakwachwa Nation living in so-called British Columbia, Canada. Gord is also a graphic artist and comic book author, most recently published the Antifa comic book, out from Arsenal Pulp Press, and runs the website Warrior Publications, and sometimes publishes under the nom de plume of Zigzag. For the hour, we speak about his writings documenting indigenous resistance history in the so-called Americas, mostly with a focus on Turtle Island, anti-fascist organizing, intersections of indigenous struggle and anarchism, and critiques of pacifism. Some of the points of resistance that we cover include El Sipogtog, Idle No More, the Oka Crisis, Stony Point, Aaz Hodeina, the Zapatista Rebellion, Unistoten Camp resistance to pipelines in so-called BC. In a brief and sad update to last week's interview on the case of Raekwon Boram, we'd like to read a statement from the Fedbook page for Charlotte Uprising. Quote, "We are deeply saddened to report that Raekwon Boram has been found guilty of possession of a firearm and second-degree murder, with him being sentenced to 25 to 26 years in a cage. We knew it would be difficult to receive a fair trial in the same court that allowed Officer Randall Carrick to walk free for the murder of unarmed Jonathan Farrell. We know the police will continue to kill black and brown folks and escape accountability. We suffered extreme suppression from the judge from the start of the trial. Even though the medical examiner testified there was a 51% chance that anything else killed Justin Carr, Judge Hayes would not allow any testimony naming the police. Of course, it is far easier to scapegoat a random black man than to launch an investigation into the same police force that killed only black people in 2015. We also know that Justin Carr would be alive were it not for the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Police Department murder of Keith Lamont Scott. No trial for that officer, of course. We know that the Mecklenburg County courts disproportionately sentence black and brown bodies to time in cages. We know that CMPD disproportionately arrests black and brown folks. Black people are 30% of Charlotte's population and make up about 70% of the jail population. We know that this is the American way. In response, we will continue to rise up and resist this colonized nation and work toward building a more decolonized world for all of us. Forward together. End quote. One housekeeping note about the show. We are happy to announce that The Final Straw is now available on the Pacifica radio platform for affiliate stations to pick up more easily.
U.S. Army whistleblower and former political prisoner Chelsea Manning has been jailed for criminal contempt for refusing a subpoena to participate in a federal grand jury in Virginia concerning her 2010 disclosures to WikiLeaks of U.S. drone killings of civilians in Afghanistan and Iraq. A support committee called Chelsea Resists has been set up, and updates will be coming from the website xychelsea.is.
And now we will return you to the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show here on KBOO.
Good morning. Good morning. We may be late, but we're here. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 your FM dial. Abe Proctor, Joe Uris, that's us. And what can I tell you? 231-8187. It's Trump Day. I know, but it is. It's Trump Day. This is a guy who is so dangerous and so powerful and so clumsy and so weird that it's almost inconceivable. Remember, have you been paying attention that when he was talking with Tim Cook of Apple, and he called him Tim Apple? And then, okay, you make a mistake like that. It's sort of an old person mistake, and yeah, he's an old person, and so on. But then he goes on a long, long discourse on how it really was just an effort to kind of make things simpler by summarizing Tim's creature comfort level and real worldness by calling him Tim Apple. And he went on with that for, you know, several tweets and so on. But, hey, I think that the things that are happening are getting weirder and weirder. What's really interesting to me is that the Trump base, who is a significant number of American people, who seem to listen to nothing, I guess, on television except Fox News, are unaware of how weird Trump is, or they don't care how weird Trump is. All they care about, apparently, is the policies that they assume or believe that Donald Trump has. And there's no real support for that, by the way. But Trump is up to an interesting new game. He is putting forth a budget that, of course, will not get adopted by the current Congress. But it's an incredible budget, the highest budget ever. enormous amount of debt, going to put up 5% more for military spending, which the military has never asked for. He's going to cut down on the monies for ordinary people in programs like Medicare, Medicaid, etc. And he's going to do all this stuff. Well, he's not going to do all this stuff because, in fact, Congress will block him. But it's a tactic. And it's not a tactic of a rational man. That's another thing that has to be considered here. So now the question really comes down to, what's the best thing to do about this guy? A, do nothing and let him crash and burn. B, oppose him constantly and let him crash and burn. Or C, impeach him and let him crash and burn. And I'm against impeachment. I just want to tell you that. I really don't want the man who can't be alone with some other woman than his wife in a room. I don't want that guy as Vice President of the United States. Meanwhile, and as I'm looking at it, the Democrats have a great lineup of candidates for president, but they have an ability which is incredible to mess up on a thing like that. So this is the world that we are inheriting. And it is an incredibly serious situation, because what we thought of as a secure democracy in America, secure democracy in the sense that it was capitalist and that there were choices, is no longer obviously so secure and no longer so obviously filled with choices. So I want to do something today we haven't ever done. I want to ask y'all, for of course you can call in about anything, let me be clear about that, but I want to ask y'all, what should be done about the Trump? I'm going to keep score. How many of you want to see him impeached, which I, again, don't think is a good idea? Or how many of you want to see him defeated, or how happy are you with him? That's three categories. And I'm going to suggest to you that it's not an easy thing to decide, because there has never been anybody in office in America, in the presidency, possibly even in Congress, but certainly in the presidency, that is both as blustery and apparently sincerely convinced of his rightness and as wrong as Donald Trump. Now, remember, whenever a crisis takes place in American history, 9/11, the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor, etc., we suspend our civil liberties and our civil rights for a while. And we give the administration a tacit carte blanche, you know, to go ahead and do whatever needs to be done as interpreted by them. This is a very scary thing. It involved the internment of Japanese American citizens, for example, in World War II. It involved getting into the Gulf Wars, endless Gulf Wars, after 9/11. It generally produces a situation which is less free, less democratic, and more totalitarian. And that pattern has always existed. There's always an emergency that requires a sudden action of the President of the United States. Even Abraham Lincoln, you know, took away the writ of habeas corpus, though he used that power judiciously. And the fact of the matter is that democracy as a phenomenon is very fragile. And I want to mention the fact that when we talk about democracy, we're not talking about social democracy. We're not talking about a system like Norway or Sweden or France, even, where certain services, housing costs, health care, schooling, employment are guaranteed. And other things are the things that are just discussed. So this is the question, really. How do we deal with this situation practically and realistically? And now I think we'll go to the phones. 231-8187. Mike, you're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you.
Sure.
And part of the crazy news this week was Nancy Pelosi saying she was against impeachment, and hearing you say you're against it is incredibly disturbing to me, because Democrats have always tried to play this chess game of playing politics and trying to outsmart the political winds, when actually it's our gut feelings and our passion that is going to make a movement, not these strategies. If anybody's gut feeling would be to impeach him, and we have to trust it. We have to trust what's right here, not what's politically expedient. And it's just it's a losing game, and that's why Bernie Sanders got cheated out of a lot last time, is because he came from the gut and we didn't pay attention. We tried to outpolitic everything, and Democrats will continue to lose if they keep that strategy. We have to go with passion and doing what's right, and it's the right thing to do to impeach him.
Okay, thank you for the call. I'm not sure you're not right. My thinking on this is that if we end up with a President Pence, even for 4 days, this is another kind of craziness. This is Christian fundamentalist, fear of women, fear of their power kind of person. He is extremely, as we used to say in the old days, extremely straight. And he will do, I'm not sure what, but not good. It's true that he'd be strapped down pretty tightly by the very fact of the impeachment of Trump. But I don't want there to be the possibility of clearing the scene of Trump so that we would have a regular contest. I'm not sure I'm right. I'm really not. So I bring it out here for us to discuss and to consider. But as to what happened to Bernie Sanders, it's really important to understand that the conservative arm, which was very large, of the Democratic Party messed with the pooch. There's no question that, this is my view, and I think it's correct, that if Bernie Sanders had been allowed to run as the candidate of the Democratic Party with full backing, he probably would have done better and probably even won. But remember, the combination of things that happened to Hillary Clinton were not all of them Hillary's fault. Now, I found her to be inauthentic. I found her to be awkward. I found her to be not the crowd pleaser that I had hoped she would be. And this is an unfortunate thing about American politics. You got to be a crowd pleaser. The other things I think are really important is the meddling by the Russians, the decision of the Hillary camp not to go into the old Rust Belt states in the Midwest, a lot of things like that, which produced a victory in the sense of the vote going for Hillary, but the Electoral College going for Trump. And by the way, the larger question of how do we do away with the Electoral College or change it in such a way that it functions effectively is another question for another time. So I don't really want to talk about that so much. But, and I do understand, I mean, this guy is really dangerous, and the really scary thing always is that if we ever manage to get into a war, which Trump would probably like, he will be even more powerful and it will be even harder to get rid of him. So maybe, you know, maybe Pence is the answer. But I'm not comfortable with that. I really want to see him go down in flames. That is Trump. Okay, so let's go to the phones again. Let's go to Edie. Edie, you're on the air.
Thank you. I can hear or read about Trump almost anywhere, anytime. And I don't want to be distracted by or reactive to him as an individual. I want to be looking at policy and values and, you know, what kind of person I want to be. And I'm curious more about Pence and about all the underground or all the other parts of the administration, because if we don't impeach Trump for all these extreme examples, then the idea of impeachment is kind of invalidated, because we have every reason to impeach. But I don't want to just stop at Trump. We have people who are committing high crimes and misdemeanor and treason and horrible corruption that we need to also impeach ASAP. And I'd like us to start with the lower level people impeach first, so they can't I want to find out more about Pence and want the public to know more about, not as an excuse to keep Trump in, but to be effective in getting rid of the power and the harm that these folks are doing.
Well, I really appreciate what you're saying. I am not a presidential scholar or a congressional scholar or anything like that. I'm pretty much of a novice in that sense. And my fields are sociology and American history, and I'm very far away from what's going on right now, really, aside from my political commitments. And I understand what you're saying, and I really appreciate it. I'm not sure, first of all, I'm not sure that cabinet members can be impeached. I think Congress can get rid of them. But
get rid of them in any legal, appropriate, and prompt way.
Okay. Well, let's just say that. I can see that. I mean, I watched. I'm liking a lot of the new Congress. There's a woman there who was a professor, who made a total fool out of the budgetary lady, and Trump generally hires people who are incompetent, actually incompetent. They're not smart conservatives. They're simple-minded Trumpers. And it's easy to see that if we could work it in such a manner that he's stripped of that kind of operatives, we could really begin to gain some power. And I don't know that we have the time. I don't know that we have the energy, and I don't know that we have the understanding of the American people to do that. But I'm hearing what you're saying, and I'm not clear. I'm very frightened in the situation we're in. I'm not clear what the best thing to do. That's why I'm opening it up. Okay. Okay. Let's go to the next caller. It's Edie. No, it's Mark. Mark, you're next.
Hey, good morning, Joe.
Good morning.
And I want to thank you. Stop. And I want to thank you guys for the show.
Sure. Thanks.
And the opportunity to speak. I'm for impeachment, and for a couple reasons. I think Edie before me mentioned several of them.
Uh-huh.
I think Trump is dangerous and unfit to be president.
Well, I agree. Let's get that out of the way. You know, absolutely. You're right.
But it's Congress's job to remove someone who's unfit.
Yes, it is.
If we abdicate that because we're not sure whether the vice president will be good or not, we're allowing a system to continue, and which shouldn't continue, and it stops us from taking Trump on and stopping the things that he's doing that are wrong. The kids that are dying in detention,
mm-hmm.
You know, and you can go through the list of everything that you guys have talked about over the last 2.5 years. It puts an end to that. It kind of says, well, we'll just let it go. We let go of the torture. We didn't prosecute anybody who tortured anybody. We let go of the banks. We didn't prosecute anybody who, you know, in banks that were too big to fail. It just seems like this is part of that same mentality where we don't prosecute somebody who's guilty. And I just don't know why we can't remove someone who's toxic to this nation. If Pence is the same, we as a nation deal with that. If he's better than Trump, we as a nation, you know, deal with that.
Well, my fear, I understand what you're saying. My fear is that Pence is a straight, in the old time cool or straight sense, a straight Christian fundamentalist guy, and he will be able to rally the enormous power of the fundamentalist world to his side. Whereas Trump, look, Trump is a guy who whores around. He's the kind of guy you would not want to have your children meet in any normal circumstances. He's very creepy, and he's very stupid. He's beginning to make what I would have to call, and this is very ageist of me, but I don't know how else to describe it, but old man errors, you know, and he's scary. And he obviously would benefit by any kind of crisis where he could declare war, which would give him more power. So I don't know. I have very mixed feelings about it. I think the energy that needs to be put in right now is to develop very quickly a really viable social democratic candidate for president, and finally, in long last, put the Democratic Party in the role of being a social democratic party like the social democratic parties of Europe. That's what I think is that's my fantasy. But I understand what you're saying, and I'm sure that most people would just as soon see Trump go away. And I often think that, and I can't even understand why it is that people like him. I'm so far away from it. I know he was a longtime Fox commentator. I know that he did his fake business show on NBC. That's on NBC. It's their fault. And I know that I watched it a couple of times and thought, oh, this is ghastly. But apparently people loved it, and I don't really understand the odd ideological base of so many people's attitudes toward capitalism and toward democracy. And I'm flummoxed. So I'm open. I'm throwing it open, and I appreciate any comment, particularly comments that are critical of the idea of not getting on Trump's case. Anyway, I want to thank you. No, go ahead.
I want to add one more
sure.
concept that maybe you and Abe can talk about, and it may apply to you guys, and it may not. There are high level ranking Republicans who basically say he's unfit for office and needs to go. There's the high level business community people say he's unfit and needs to go.
Well, yeah, I agree
with you. It's really disturbing that the Democrats don't say that.
Well.
Yeah, you guys don't say that, and that's scary to me.
Okay, I appreciate that. I think that the Democrats, as a party, have always been, I can't use the last part of this term, but chicken. They have always, in modern times, moved toward a center, mild idea. If you don't like us now, we'll play softer, you know what I mean? And I think that is a real problem. I would like to see a very strong, clear candidate. I think the whole green push is crucial and important and worth doing. I think there's nothing wrong with losing and having, I don't want to say this, but acknowledging that we have become what we seem to be, which is sort of a fascist nation. But I think the confrontation is a good one. I don't know that it's best done through impeachment. I think it's maybe best done through the electoral process. That's all I'm saying about that. And I do appreciate the fact that Trump is scary and he is definitely incompetent. I mean, here's a guy who talking to the head of Apple, Tim Cook. He calls him Tim Apple. I mean, this is a man who's totally flummoxed in the mind and shouldn't probably be president. Anyway, thank you for the call, man. Okay, I think Robbie is next. Robbie, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to share some things with, I guess to comment quickly, like I don't really feel as though impeachment is going to do anything at this point in stage. I mean, I think it would be more important to focus on the election to make sure that Trump doesn't get back into that, which brings me to what I really want to share with people. And what always kind of surprises me is the Democrats, as you said, we are very centrist, and this is how the neoliberals work. They tell us that they're for all these causes, you know, whether it's Feinstein, whether it's Pelosi, and then basically what will happen is they get into power, and then they're, you know, they do the exact opposite, or they kind of like sugarcoat what they're doing and make us think it's all progressive. That's why Hillary Clinton lost and Donald Trump won. It's because people were tired of that sugar coating.
Well, I think let me just say, in part, you're correct. But remember all the other factors in the Hillary case. But go ahead.
And actually, this is going to bring it up. This is what's going to. You said earlier that Russians were interfering with our election. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, and I'm not denying that. However, I do want to say that Hillary Clinton was accused by Putin back in 2012, I believe, about interfering with their election. Now, if you look at like our foreign intervention into foreign elections, it's. I mean, look what's going on in Venezuela. We're literally telling a person to step down. But that's beside the point. My point is, if you look and you take what the narrative of the Russian meddling in our election is, and I want to tell me where I'm wrong, but basically Julian Assange published hacked emails from the DNC camp, right?
Right.
And so WikiLeaks now is being tried by our American courts for, you know, whatever, interfering with our election. But here's the thing. The emails which interfered with the election because trolls were picking up on the published emails and saying that it was damaging Hillary Clinton. Now, what was damaging was the fact that she had rigged the DNC primary. Am I wrong?
No, you're right. To a great extent.
Well, hang on. Check it out, though. If the fact of the matter is that Russia interfered with our election by exposing that Hillary Clinton interfered with the election, I'm still mad at the DNC, and I'm not going to vote for Hillary Clinton. I didn't vote for Hillary Clinton in 2016. I did vote for a woman. I actually voted for Bernie Sanders before, but because he wasn't nominated, I voted for Jill Stein. And I'm not going to vote for somebody who's going to do something that interferes with an election. Two, is completely, as I see, a part of the problem with neoliberal policies and us. Have you ever heard of the ratchet effect?
No.
The ratchet effect is basically what's going on with our Democratic Party. Imagine we can only crank to the right, and Democrats.
Oh, I
right
see.
Now, so every time that a Republican, you know, whenever we do a compromise, Democrats, as you called it, soft, you know, we go center, and then they go more right, and that's how they're getting us to where we see. Anyway, I'll take my comments off the air. I just want to really let your listeners know that Hillary Clinton is the reason why Donald Trump's in office, and if anybody should Bill Clinton and Donald Trump talk politics in 2016. It's a Washington Post article which describes how Bill Clinton told Donald Trump to run. And
I didn't know that. Is that really true?
Yes. Google Washington Post, Hillary, Donald Trump and Bill Clinton talked politics in run-up to an election in 2015. And when you look it up, it says that four allies from the Trump and four allies from the Clinton campaign, well, actually, Bill Clinton's, I don't know, his associates or his PR people, they basically both admitted that Donald Trump and Bill Clinton talked weeks before Donald Trump had announced running and a month after Hillary Clinton announced running. And they said that their topic was jovial. It was conversation. They didn't discuss the election is what they said, but he did say, Bill Clinton said that he was going to be striking a chord with frustrated conservatives and then said that he could probably play a larger part in the role. This is right before he announced running. So whenever we look at this, we have to acknowledge what Malcolm X said a long time ago, which is the more dangerous person than the Republicans are the Democrats who will convince you that they're on your side and then do exactly the opposite.
Well, I appreciate your point. And I didn't know about this thing with Clinton and Trump. I think that, you know, Trump for a while was a Democrat. And I think that it's...
Up until 2009, he was a Democrat.
Yeah, right. So we have to remember that when we castigate. I never thought Bill Clinton was my kind of guy politically.
Oh, he's not a Democrat.
Yeah, no, I don't think he is either. And I think that the Democratic Party has really been falling into a bad branding pattern. And I agree with you there. As to the question of Jill Stein, I think she was used by the Russians a lot, and I don't think it's her fault because I think she was sincerely trying to push a green agenda. But you know,
why was she used by the Russians?
Oh, there's no question about it. I mean, she was that was one of their trollings. They supported her a lot, and in fact, she was their guest in Moscow. Anyway, I'm gonna let that go and
wait. Okay. Hang on. Let me comment just one thing really quick on that. Is that all right?
Sure.
If Russia used Jill Stein, I'm just confused because I thought that they were using published hacked WikiLeaks, you know, emails from the DNC server to interfere with the election. The fact that I voted for Jill Stein in an effort to try to take a third party more serious because a two-party system is what's corrupting our nation right now, I don't see how that's a problem. I think that would be a Russia actually maybe inadvertently helping us.
Well, I would divert from what I'm asking about today, but I appreciate it. I'm pretty convinced about what happened with Jill Stein. I think she's a sincere lady, but I think that a terrible error on her part was to see.
Oh, I didn't want to vote for her. I didn't want to vote for her at all. In fact, I wasn't going to vote after Bernie didn't make the primary. But at the end of the year, with all the hate for people who didn't vote for Hillary Clinton, I wanted to be able to say I voted for a woman just so people would leave me alone.
Well, that's interesting. Hey, listen, thanks a lot for the call. I'm asking the question, should we or should we not impeach Trump? There's plenty of evidence that he has committed high crimes and misdemeanors. There's plenty of evidence, in fact, that he's incompetent, perhaps even senile. I don't like to use that term. I'm an old guy myself. But boy, when he starts talking about Tom Cook as Tom Apple, and he's done this more than one time, and then he goes ahead and tries to defend that behavior, looks pretty bad. Let's go to the next caller, 231-8187. I think it's Pear. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning, Joe.
Good morning.
Well, I don't know. You say, should we impeach Trump? It's like, how would that roll out? Are we going to impeach him because he's going to war with Venezuela, because he's destroying their economy? I mean, it's...
Well, those would be good reasons, but yeah. And no, you'd have to show that he actually committed crimes, which I think he has.
Well, in the first, let me say one little thing about this hacking business. I keep bringing this up in other venues. William Binney, who was with the NSA for 30 years, he was a technical director, and he laid it all out. He said it was not a hack; it was a leak. And he said he based it on two things, two facts. One was that the NSA has records of every communication going on, so they would have it somewhere anyway. The other is that the time signatures of the material show it could not have been hacked. Now, this is William Binney saying this, pointing to two specific facts, and if you dispute it, fine, bring up a counter-argument, but it's ignored. It's totally ignored, and that, to me, and I'm not blaming you, I'm blaming the entire establishment. They're ignoring this and they're pushing this hacking theory, and well, defend it then. That's that point. The other is, how does this relate to the ongoing war in Venezuela? We have, it's not Trump all by himself who is waging cyber war in Venezuela. It's pretty clear to me that what's going on there is some kind of cyber attack. For one thing, it's very interesting coincidence that all of a sudden this creaky electric grid in Venezuela completely implodes just at a time when we are going to war with them. And the other is that it's sort of inconceivable to me that this just happens just by coincidence at this particular time.
Okay.
Okay. So basically, I think my main point is that Trump is everything you say he is, but he is not all by himself. He is at one end of a really lousy spectrum of American leadership. He is, in one way, you can say he's brutally honest about Venezuela. He's quoted as saying, look at Venezuela, they got all that oil and they're right at our back door. See, the Democrats wouldn't be so brutally honest. They'd come up with some sort of ridiculous, I don't know what, freedom crusade or something. Anyway. That's my point. You know, it's impeaching Trump right now is kind of irrelevant. It really is. For getting names wrong, for what? I mean,
okay, man. I appreciate your point, and I think it was well made. Thank you for the call. All right. Incidentally, the thing about Venezuela that people may not remember is that for many, many years, it functioned essentially as a cash cow for the Rockefellers. They were the controllers of the oil there. They were the controllers of that region. In fact, when World War II was dawning, the United States launched a good neighbor policy with all of Latin America. The Disney Company produced films, including the cartoon film Los Tres Caballeros. There was an enormous effort to make everybody in the region think we were good guys and good friends. And it was certainly the case that it was never the intention of the United States to have an independent country, an independent government, a democratic government anywhere in Latin America, and that Cuba was a horrifying aberration to the ruling class in this country. And they really did try in most of the ways you could imagine, both to kill Castro and to break him militarily. And not to mention to starve him to death, starve Cuba to death. Let's go to another set of callers, 231-8187. It's Natano. You're on the air.
Hey, Joe. I think the fear of having Pence in there is lacking the comprehensive look at the situation. He's a cult of personality. Pence can't step into his footsteps or his shoes and bring the same type of influence that the base who's following Trump, has. So I think if we can't impeach or if we don't impeach him, who are we going to impeach? I mean, if Clinton can be impeached for what he did...
Well, that was ridiculous.
Which, yeah, and it wasn't the worst of what he did. I mean, if you know anything about the Iran-Contra stuff, which is why I didn't vote for Hillary... it's just part of this family of nefarious characters, but the mean, we should, it's just, you know, we need to have it on his record that he was impeached, because he has done so much out in the open that if Obama would have done one of the things that he does on a daily basis, Obama would have been impeached. I mean, it's ridiculous to think that Pence is going to have the same kind of influence that Trump has, because Pence is not going to hold the base, I don't think. And so that's my two cents worth.
Okay, I appreciate the comment. I really do. 231-8187, we're sort of asking the question and going elsewhere with it. Should we impeach the fool, or should we keep him around? And I kind of like to, I would like to see him soundly defeated at the polls by a powerful Social Democratic Party, and I would feel a lot better if that were to happen. Now, impeaching him wouldn't break my heart, but let's go to the phones. Linda, I believe you're next.
Hi, Joe. Can an impeached president run for office again? See, I think it's silly to wait, and I think the Democrats wait on everything. And really, the truth is that they don't. They want to maintain their own power. It's not about they want to get Trump out any more than just have their own president in. But I don't think that they care about us and what he's doing to us. And I agree with Per, they're warmongers just like Trump. They just have a different brand of it. They certainly didn't want any success in Korea. But can an impeached president run again? I think he should be impeached. And I think in part because someone should think about allowing the public, you know, engaging us, the people. We should be rising up against having a president who has separated thousands of children from their families and still has families and children in cages on our border. I think waiting is like saying we can take another week of that and then impeach Pence right after. And we need to have a vibrant public in the streets and in the polls, and we can't wait and hope that some strategy by billionaire leadership of the Democratic Party is going to win us anything meaningful.
Well, I appreciate what you're saying, and I'm not sure you're not right. I think that part of what we're talking about is that the overall leadership and ruling class of both political parties are part of an established capitalist system. We do not have a left-wing, independent, powerful political party. When there are left-wing parties, they are hapless and unable to gain adequate support. And in general, it has been a pattern where things have moved steadily, I have to say this, steadily to the right. And the logical outcome of that is Donald Trump. So, you know,
well, and it's with this Democratic Party. This Democratic Party has, it's been a continuity of leadership from Democrats to Republicans for my whole life, and I'm about as old as you, as far as I can see. And we have to face that, but we also have to demand of them what we want. And what we want is not to have this Trump regime in. You know, them playing their strategic games, we know how nasty and secret they get. We got to see those emails. But that they're not fundamentally on our side, and I don't think we should wait around. I think we should demand what we want Trump out. We should demand they figure out a way to do it now. He's committed way enough crimes.
Okay, I appreciate the comment, and I think you may be right. By the way, there's a whole problem which goes beyond the question of Trump and beyond the Republican versus Democratic parties. We have not had a party that represents the interests of working people in a long, long time. The Democrats, more than the Republicans, pay lip service, but in essence, we don't have a political structure where there are real parties. And we don't have a system that would encourage that. It's very difficult to break in and to make some real changes. And this has been true forever. And I think that was part of the Founding Fathers' intent, in fact. I think they were fundamentally conservative. Remember, they didn't let women vote. They didn't let people of color vote or even be free. They didn't let people without land vote. And they created the system of the Electoral College. They were very frightened of democracy, and they were the first democracy in the modern world. And that is something we're still suffering from. That's fundamental. Now, the question of what do you do in this situation is very, very difficult. it's easier probably to gather enormous support for an opposition when the behavior of that government, that establishment government, becomes so horrendous, as in the case of the Vietnam War. But remember that the Vietnam War was not the thing that got rid of Richard Nixon. It was his own creepy cheating that did him in. And it's not clear, by the way, somebody said, well, can Trump run again after he's impeached? And I don't know, but it seems like he could, because he would just be another citizen, you know? But as the crimes, as the misdemeanors, as the bad behavior, as the racism and the sexism and so on pile up in Trump's bag of bad goodies, all of us are going to become more and more anxious to get rid of him. The Democrats constantly are pulling back and holding off and so on. So I don't want to take that role either. And I just don't know what the strategically wisest position is. And it's a very difficult quandary. Again, we don't have political parties that truly represent, say, left or right, or in the environmental community versus the capitalist opportunist community or whatever. We don't have that. And we're very far from being able to have that. And we have a lot of things that are very contradictory. For example, Trump says, well, we should get out of NATO. And, you know, everybody goes, oh, no, we need NATO. Well, in fact, logically and rationally, we don't need NATO. Europe should defend itself. I mean, really, Europe is wealthy. Europe is powerful. Europe should take care of its own business. I'm not in favor of our continually pouring money into the region. By the way, the Trump budget, the proposed budget, which is not going to pass, pushes a 5% increase in the military that they have not asked for. My producer says, if he's impeached, that is Trump, in the House, but not convicted in the Senate, he definitely can run again. So, you know, we know that. That much. Well, whether he was actually convicted in the Senate, I don't know what that does. But I do know that we're in a very bad situation here. And larger picture, there is this, no question about it, onrushing environmental crisis that will overtake so much of the world, that will hurt so many people, that will cause populations to migrate in so many different places. This is going to be really horrible. This is something we're going to, unfortunately, give our children and our children's children and their children after them. And this is a very, very sad, very, very serious situation. Meanwhile, there's Donald Trump. And the only advantage I see to Donald Trump is that I find him funny. And that's a pretty lousy reason to keep him around. All right. I'd like to hear from you, 231-8187. Should we impeach him? Should we keep him? Should we make him dance on the end of a string? Call him a puppet? What do we want to do? I was thinking about this a lot last night. And God, this guy is really awful. Really awful. The most recent awfulness is the fact that he's friends with this pimp woman, originally from China, who apparently has contacts within the Chinese government, which I find amazing. And I don't understand how that is so easy, how that is so easy to happen. Her Western name is Cindy Yang. She runs a bunch of stroke shops, which is stroke shops, that's actually the so-called massage parlors. The head of, kind of a funny thing, the head of the guy who owns the New England Patriots was caught up in a sting in one of her operations. This is not a righteous government by any means. We are not righteous in most of our engagement by any means. And I think the most people's response, including here on this station, is to become very cynical and to say the hell with it and to pull away. But that's very dangerous because, in fact, it's a system that really is structured around the notion, not the reality, but the notion of democracy. And we are in terrible, terrible peril when we ignore the reality of the situation. It is the case that right now, all over the world, authoritarian regimes, even fascist regimes, are gaining ground. We certainly cannot discuss China without acknowledging that it is not a free democracy. Certainly, we don't think of Russia as a free democracy. Certainly, Hungary and Austria and Poland are not exhibiting the symptoms of freedom. And it's all very, 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 very concerning. But I want to hear from you. 231-8187. Oh, here's David. David, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
So Trump is obviously an issue. The right's obviously an issue. But I think what we're seeing is the death throes of that right, that racist, xenophobic right, and that's why they're lashing out so bad. So for me, you know, they're not as much of a concern in the long run as really the Democrats are for me. You know, I've been in local statewide politics for the last 4 years, doing working on different campaigns, you know, just being involved. And what I've witnessed is the Democrats time and time again walk back from the things that they say they want to do because they're controlled by corporations. They're the real problem. I mean, look at the clean energy jobs bill. It's supposed to do good things, but if you look at the wording and you look at what the policy actually is, it doesn't. It only covers like 15% of our emissions. You know, if you look at the housing bill that they just passed, that's going to guarantee at least a 7% increase in rent every year, while wages are barely going up, even though we're supposed to get to $14.75 by 2021, I think it is. You know, I worked on that $15 minimum wage bill, and I watched the Democrats listen to corporations over the needs of the people. Like, so for me, I think it's really important that we all focus on getting out these corporate Democrats at the local and state level, and then we can really change the national politics. But until those Democrats get out of the way and economy for, I mean, health care, we're not going to get anywhere.
Okay, I take your point, and I think it is a valid one. The problem I have, of course, is that we only got these two parties. It has never been successful since the creation of the Republican Party back in the 1859, 1860, that we've come up with a third party that takes a dominant role. However, I understand your argument, and I appreciate it very much. Okay, I'm going to look for some more folks. Yes, we have them. The number to call, 231-8187. It's another Mike. You're on the air.
Yeah, Joe, I'd like to have you put on your historian hat and go back over. You mentioned about we haven't had a real democracy or a real government that had the people in mind, and put your hat on and go back to Roosevelt, for example. Uh-huh. From there on, you know, Truman, Eisenhower, so forth and so on, and what you think, who was the last president who really had the people in mind and did decent work for us?
Well, I don't think it's that they particularly had the people in mind. I think that under Roosevelt, there was an enormous fear of collapse, enormous fear, in fact, of revolution. There was the apparent success of the Soviet Union. There was the incredible, incredible danger of another world war. There were all sorts of things happening. And Roosevelt responded to that by essentially arguing effectively to the ruling class that what he can do will save American capitalism. That's what he did. Essentially, if he had not done that, we would have probably had a revolution, I think, and it would have been who knows how that would have ended up.
Yeah.
So, you know, then going the next person, well, Truman was brought in through a manipulation within the Democratic Party to get rid of Henry Wallace, who was a true social democrat.
Right.
And he then ran as an independent in the Progressive Party, which got dominated to a great extent by the old people in the CP, in the Communist Party. And, of course, it didn't get anywhere. At the same time, there were the Dixiecrats, which was the right-wing Southern Democrats. Between those two, Truman still won. And after Truman comes Eisenhower. Eisenhower was essentially a corporatist. And he was also fairly enlightened in certain ways, but he certainly did not favor equality for races, and he certainly was not interested in women's rights. But what he was a very rational person with a very rational establishmentarian point of view. And then, so that's what I can say about those guys. I'm sorry. Anyway.
Yeah, interesting, because, you know, I do recall, I'm old enough to remember when Truman was on his train going through after, you know, like you say, he was a pretty
Oh, you mean the old give him hell, Harry bit?
Yeah, give them hell, Harry. Get on the back of the train. I kind of miss those old days compared to what we have now.
Well, you know, they were technologically limiting, and they were exciting, and they were really the end of the 19th century style.
Yeah.
By the way, I suspect that the guy who always yelled, give them hell, Harry, might have been an agent of the Democratic Party. You know?
Well, listen, I appreciate your program, and I like it when you give a little history, because you certainly know that, and it's we need to hear more about what took place before as to how we're going to handle what's happening now.
Well, I think that is important, and I think another thing that is important is to understand that this country was founded on very conservative principles, and in fact, it was a place where capital could grow. And that was a large part of what the intention of the founding fathers were.
Yeah.
Remember, too, there were no founding mothers.
That's right. I think we're having some right now. Unfortunately, I say to my wife all the time, I'm...
Oh, we lost you. I don't know what happened. I'm sorry. We're going to go on to somebody else. 231-8187 is the number to call. Well, we're on what I was asking, just as a rhetorical more than anything else, question is, should we impeach Trump? Oh, Ron, you're on.
Oh, okay, Joe.
Yeah.
The gentleman prior to me was talking about how maybe we're seeing the Republican Party, where the throws of the Republican Party, you know, they're in disrepair. I think this country is in disrepair. You know, the fabric, I thought the fabric of this country was torn for a long time. It's in shreds. And we're partly having a problem. I mean, you know, we're not, Trump is just a symptom of who we are. And if we don't get our act together, there's no telling where this country's going. We've got people attacking, humiliating each other, you know, and we've got people committing these murders, suicides, and they attack and humiliate each other, and then they wonder why some guy goes off the deep end and starts shooting and killing people.
Well, you're making quite a jump, but I understand what you're saying. Certainly we're not a healthy culture.
Exactly. And until we wake up and stop allowing ourselves to be run by those that have their own interests at heart, you know, we're just going down, and you know, it hurts.
I appreciate what you're saying. I want to get one last person in. Chris, you're next.
Thank you.
Go. Chris, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Speak.
Oh, hey. I heard of a group just recently, and I wanted to know if you could speak on it a little bit. American Descendants of Slavery. You know, I'm in my mid-50s now, and, you know, I've never poured any real energy into anything because I think our country's in a mess. And I've, you know, I'm an independent. I voted Republican in the 80s and 90s, and I voted against myself as a black. I'm just wondering if anything ever is going to be done about. Yes, I'm wondering if anything is ever going to be done for the American descendants of slavery, because we're talking about the folks down there on the border who are in cages, and we're talking about the separation of families and women being raped and all blah blah blah. That's all important to me, but I want to say
it's not.
A lot of that has already taken place with African.
I see what you're saying. You're talking about historically the role of black people under slavery. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That, no, you're absolutely right.
You know, they're going to hold the Democratic Party pretty much hostage in 2020, and I hope they do. Until something's really done in regards to the American descendants of slavery, there's going to be trouble issues, and now it's going to, you know, it's going to pretty much continue to be throughout the rest of the Americans.
No, I agree with you. I think that if you believe in karma, which is an interesting concept, the karma of the United States of America in the end is not very good. Our behavior toward our fellow people is not very good. Our behavior in the world situation is not very good. A lot of what we pretend to be is not real. So you've got a good point there. And I'm unfortunately out of time. And this was an interesting conversation. I want to thank everybody. And I apologize for being a little late today. I will see you, and Abe will be back on next Tuesday.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those Nads in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the...
KBOO at the Clinton is a monthly film series that benefits your community radio station. This month, we'll screen the documentary film Circle of Poison on Thursday, March 14th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. Once a pesticide is banned in the United States for its dangerous health and environmental effects, companies are still permitted to manufacture it for export only. Circle of Poison documents the export of dangerous pesticides and the inspiring ways communities are fighting back. Again, that's Circle of Poison on Thursday, March 14th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is KBOO Portland. The time now is 9 o'clock. Coming up next on Alternative Radio, David looks at the state of Cuba-U.S. relations under the Trump administration. At 10 on Flashpoints, Dennis Bernstein looks at the jailing of Chelsea Manning and other news issues of the day. And at 11, Stage and Studio is off this week, so instead we have dual episodes of Art Focus with Joseph Galavan. All of this KBOO programming is made possible by member support. To become a member, go to kboo.fm and click on the button marked Donate.
KBOO Community Radio, a proud co-sponsor of Deconstruction, an evening of Japanese food and culture on Sunday, March 17th from 6 to 9 p.m. at Two Strokes Coffee Company in Portland. Deconstruction is an educational evening of Japanese food and culture benefiting the California Wildlife Relief Fund. The event features Yuri Baxter Neal, Yuhet Sato,